The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, March Madness is right around the corner, y'all. It is exciting. Sports is just getting kicked off into gear. You know, basketball's NBA's going, and then we've got college basketball conference tournaments going on this week. So shit's starting to get real with basketball. So let's get right into what happened with the NBA this week. Just a couple of things, actually. It wasn't a really newsworthy NBA week. There were a couple things that did happen on Monday night. The Cleveland Cavaliers played a great game against the Boston Celtics, took it to overtime and got the win 118-114. Donovan Mitchell dropped 41 points, 11 rebounds. I will say on the Boston Celtics side, Jason Tatum did not play, so that obviously had some type of effect on the game, I imagine, but it was still a very close game. Like I said, Donovan Mitchell had a great game. And then Grant Williams for the Boston Celtics in overtime actually had an opportunity to tie the game with some free throws. And he ended up missing the free throws. And the Cavaliers would end up going on to win that one. Then on Tuesday night, the Lakers actually had a very good game. They beat the Memphis Grizzlies 112-103. Anthony Davis went off. He had 30 points and 22 rebounds. So as usual, when Anthony Davis is healthy, he plays great. I mean, he's been a double-double machine when he's healthy, but I mean, that's always the phrase you say after mentioning Anthony Davis and his points or whatever he does in a game is, this is great when he's healthy. But the Lakers did have a good game. They are starting to look like they're going to possibly grab one of the last playoff spots, but as I've stated, who gives a fuck, because they're not a legitimate championship contender. And then the other bit of NBA news this week, on Wednesday night, during warm-ups, Kevin Durant injured his ankle, and he's going to, not only did he miss his home debut for the Phoenix Suns, but now it looks like he's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks, and it didn't affect that game in particular. Phoenix just absolutely demolished Oklahoma City that night, 132-101. But that just kind of sucks. He just traded Kevin Durant, and now he is injured yet again and going to be out the next couple of weeks. So hopefully he'll be ready when the playoffs get kicked off and ready to go, because the Phoenix Suns are definitely going to need him for that portion of the season. All right, now moving on to college basketball. The conference tournament started this week. Let's just talk about a few of the important ones, I would say. Because like I said, March Madness is right around the corner. Selection Sunday is this Sunday. And then the first couple of games begin on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then, boom, we get started with March Madness here pretty soon in the next week or so. So looking forward to that. But right now, the conference tournaments are going on right now, and that's really where college basketball really gets going. And so we've had already a good week of college basketball. Let's begin with the Big 12 championship, just because I'm a Texas Longhorns fan, and they are the number 2 seed right now in the Big 12 tournament. The semifinals are tonight. The first matchup is going to be number 1 Kansas versus number 5 Iowa State. And then we'll have number 2 Texas versus number 6 TCU. I do think in both of those matchups, the favorites will go ahead and walk away with those wins. I've got Kansas beating out Iowa State and Texas beating TCU. So the championship would be tomorrow, and I have Kansas versus Texas, and I have Texas taking down Kansas. They actually dominated Kansas last week in just a regular season matchup. And I actually think Texas is going to go ahead. And I mean, they absolutely dominated in last night's matchup. Who'd they play? Oklahoma State, I believe. Regardless of what's going on, the Longhorns are looking actually really good right now. Although Kansas is playing really well as well. But the Longhorns, I just think, are playing really great basketball right now. And I do think they're going to walk away as the Big 12 champions. So hook 'em horns, motherfucker. Then the ACC tournament, tonight's semifinals matchup is number one Miami versus number four Duke, and then number two Virginia versus number three Clemson. I have Miami and Virginia moving on for the ACC tournament, conference tournament, and that one's really tough just because Miami's been playing great basketball this season, but so is Virginia, and I'm going to go ahead and take Virginia in this one. Just because I think both teams are they match up very well against each other. And, I just kind of see Virginia getting that win and taking the ACC tournament. And then the Big East semifinals are tonight. First matchup is Marquette versus UConn, number one Marquette versus number four UConn. And, it's nice to see UConn, back in competitive form yet again. And then the second matchup at the semifinals is number two Xavier versus number three Creighton. I have Marquette beating UConn, and then I have Creighton beating Xavier. So my Big East championship would be Marquette versus Creighton. And I'm going to go ahead and take Marquette in that one just because Marquette has really been turning it on. These past couple of months, they look like one of the best teams actually in college basketball. And so I have Marquette beating Creighton for the Big East championship. Then the Big Ten quarterfinals, they begin tonight. Semifinals are tomorrow, and the championship is on Sunday. So first matchup tonight is Purdue versus Rutgers. Number one Purdue versus number nine Rutgers. I have Purdue winning that one. Then the next matchup is number four Michigan State versus number 13 Ohio State. I have Michigan State getting that win. Then number two Northwestern versus number 10 Penn State. I have Northwestern getting that win. And then number three, Indiana versus number six, Maryland. I have Maryland pulling the upset. So my semifinals matchups would be Purdue versus Maryland. I have Purdue moving on in that one. And then Northwestern versus Michigan State. I have Northwestern moving on to that one. So my Big Ten championship would be Purdue versus Northwestern. And I have Purdue winning that one just because Purdue also had a, well, they've kind of fallen off the last couple of weeks. I still believe in them, and I've got them as the Big Ten champions. Then the Pac-12 semifinals are tonight. First matchup is number one UCLA versus number four Oregon, and then number two Arizona versus number six Arizona State. I have UCLA and Arizona moving on to the Pac-12 championship, and then I have UCLA winning that one as the Pac-12 champions, just because I think they're one of the best teams in college basketball. As a matter of fact, I think they're going to be one of the dark horse teams, and don't be surprised if you potentially see them as the national champion when March Madness is over. And then rounding out the tournaments, I have the SEC tournament. Their quarterfinals are tonight, semifinals are tomorrow, and the championship is on Sunday. So the first matchup of tonight would be is number one Alabama versus number nine Mississippi State. I have Alabama moving on in that one. Then number four Missouri versus number five Tennessee. I have Tennessee moving on in that one. Then number two Texas A&M versus number 10 Arkansas. I have A&M moving on in that one. And then number three Kentucky versus number six Vanderbilt. I have Kentucky moving on in that one. So my semifinals matchups would be Alabama versus Tennessee. I have Alabama moving on in that matchup. And then Texas A&M versus Kentucky. I have A&M moving on to in that one. So my SEC championship would be Alabama versus Texas A&M. And I have Alabama winning the SEC tournament. So that's how I feel like the conference tournaments are going to shape out this weekend. And next week, we'll be finally talking some March Madness, and it's going to be basketball, basketball, and more motherfucking basketball. We did have a little bit of NFL news this week. So franchise tags were doled out, and Lamar Jackson was franchised, given a non-exclusive franchise tag by the Baltimore Ravens, meaning any team has the potential to sign him if they want to, and then Baltimore could counter offer and basically pay more if they want to. In an odd turn of events, especially for, because, you know, Lamar Jackson is by far one of the most talented and most promising quarterbacks in the league. And I kind of feel like if you got that dude as your quarterback, you want to keep him, at least for the next couple of years. You know, he is injury prone. That is a problem. But it's been a very weird move here because, you know, it's just been tenuous contract negotiations between him and the Ravens, which, I mean, that happens all the time. That's nothing new. But what was very weird is that after he was franchised, a few teams, like, specifically released press statements saying that we're not even going to attempt to go after Lamar Jackson, which I think is just very random and very weird because I don't think anybody would do that. Let's say if Patrick Mahomes was in this situation. I feel like he would have many teams going after him. It's very weird to me that the Ravens, I mean, they do want to pay Lamar Jackson, but I just think it's weird they don't really want to make the investment in him. But I thought it was even more weird that teams specifically came out and were like, we're not going to go after him. Like, why the hell would you not want to go after one of the best quarterbacks in the league? Like, I'm not going to lie to kick it. As a Dallas Cowboys fan, if they were to shit-can Dak Prescott and sign Lamar Jackson, I am 100% all in favor of a move like that, just because that's how good I think Lamar Jackson is. So while it's not really weird to see this going on between he and Baltimore, I do think a deal is going to get worked out. Regardless, he's going to get paid this year as the Baltimore quarterback, unless he holds out, of course. But I just thought it was weird that other teams came out and were like, we're not going to go after him. Like, why? Especially because they were teams that needed quarterbacks. It's not like we were talking about the Kansas City Chiefs. We're like, oh yeah, no, we're good. We don't need him. Duh. Of course they're good. They don't need him. But like, just teams like the Dolphins said they weren't going to go after him. And it's like, you could use Lamar Jackson over Tua Tagovailoa. But I digress. Then the next moves, the next move was the New York Giants ended up franchise tagging running back Saquon Barkley, and they were able to do that because it was either going to be they were going to franchise him or Daniel Jones, and they ended up working out a deal with quarterback Daniel Jones, which was actually very laughable in my opinion, just because Daniel Jones is not a good quarterback. He's an okay quarterback. He could get the job done. If you give him the right amount of weapons, he's probably a pretty decent quarterback, but overall, he's not that good of a quarterback. And while he did have a decent season this year, he's getting, like, top-tier money for a quarterback here, and he's just, he's not that good. But I think he's going to be getting something, excuse me, something like $40 million this year, so cool. I mean, good for him. But I think that's just a horrible move by the Giants just because I don't think he's going to be the future of their organization. But apparently he's going to be the future of their organization. But works for me because I fucking hate the New York Giants. And so in my opinion, that just makes them, that means they're going to be pretty bad, at least for next year, in my opinion. So cool. Good on ya. And then the last bit of NFL news is the Minnesota Vikings are going to release wide receiver Adam Thielen. There's actually been over the last couple of weeks scuttlebutt that they were going to release him. And that's just yet another really solid wide receiver out on the market. I mean, he's obviously not what he used to be. He's become injury prone over the last couple of years. But regardless, I mean, if he goes, whoever signs him is getting a solid wide receiver, getting a great veteran, and a guy who's had a solid career. So whoever gets him, getting a gem right there. So there's yet another good wide receiver out there on the free agent market. All right, and now I actually am going to break it down into two top five lists this week. You know, I was talking about John Jones the last couple of episodes. talking about how I believe he is the GOAT in UFC, and that got me thinking, who do I think are the best UFC fighters? So today I'm going to do the top five male and female UFC fighters. I did want to include both, and I didn't want to mix the lists, because you can definitely mix the lists, but I just felt it was better to separate them out between male and female. So that's what we're going to go ahead and do for this week's top five. We're going to do two top five lists, and so let's kick it off with the top five greatest male UFC fighters of all time. I do have some honorable mentions, so let's start it off with the first honorable mention is Chuck Liddell. I had to include him. He just missed the top five, in my opinion, because there's just, I feel like, much greater fighters with bigger resumes than him. But the thing about Chuck Liddell is he basically started the UFC. He was basically the first, he was the face of the UFC for a very long time. He was like their first superstar, and he was a damn good ass fighter. So his career record was, he was 21-9. His weight class was light heavyweight and heavyweight. Some of the awards he won, he was 2 times fight of the night, 2-time knockout of the night, and he is a UFC Hall of Famer. Belts achieved, he's achieved the light heavyweight title, and he's defended that title 4 times. So Chuck Liddell, you really can't talk UFC in the history of the UFC. And this year actually is the UFC's 30th year, their 30th anniversary. So they are celebrating a lot of their past. And Chuck Liddell, I just kind of feel like when talking about UFC, you can't not bring up his name and what he did for the UFC. And the UFC would probably not be where it's at today without Chuck Liddell. So I absolutely had to put him in the honorable mentions. My second honorable mention is Conor McGregor. You know, he just really took over the UFC. Once he hit, he was just a knockout king. The attention he still brings to the UFC, and the dude hasn't fought now in almost a year, or 2 years. Was it 2 years ago that he, yeah, I think it was actually 2 years ago that he busted his ankle. So, but his presence is known. Now, he's supposed to fight again at some point this year. But I mean, to act like he isn't a historical figure in UFC is just stupid. I mean, he just really came in and he kind of brought that boxing attitude, because if you're a boxer, one of the things you're supposed to do to generate views is you're supposed to talk a lot of shit, and leading up to the fight, it's supposed to be a war. Even if you guys don't truly hate each other, you're supposed to act like you truly hate each other. And that's what Conor McGregor brought to this. I mean, he did go too far, especially the time when he threw a fucking dolly at a bus against Khabib Nurmagomedov. So, I mean, he has taken it too far in certain instances. But overall, I mean, Conor McGregor is also a huge piece as to why the UFC is so popular these days, because he just really came in like a wrecking ball. Like, he was Miley Cyrus and just knocked everybody down. And his last couple of fights have not been that great, but still, whatever. Historically, he's one of the greats. Overall, his career record right now is 22-6. The weight classes he's fought in, featherweight, lightweight, and welterweight. The awards he's won, first UFC double champ, 7-time performance of the night, 2-time fight of the night, knockout of the night, fastest title fight victory in UFC history with 13 seconds, 2015 fighter of the year, and 2021 highest paid athlete of the year. And that actually had nothing to do with the UFC. That actually had to do with his stupid fight against Floyd Mayweather, in which he was paid like $100 million, I believe, or something insane like that for that gimmicky bullshit. Belts achieved, he's won titles as the featherweight and lightweight, although he has never defended his titles, which is one of the reasons why I couldn't put him in the top five, But I also felt like it's doing a disservice to UFC, UFC history, and the greatness that is Conor McGregor to not at least mention him in the honorable mentions. And then my last honorable mention is the aforementioned Khabib Nurmagomedov. He is one of the greatest wrestlers you will ever fucking see. The best way to describe his wrestling style is he is like an anaconda. He just knows, he has this way of where he will just like grab every piece of your body and like suffocate you to death. And it's just craziest thing to watch. Just watch, just go to YouTube and watch highlights of his and you will just see him. It's just the craziest shit to see how he will just get anybody, everybody who he fights, because he is undefeated. Everybody who he fights, he just gets you in the craziest fucking positions and will grab each and every appendage you have, and you won't be able to get out of this guy's grip. It's just absolutely insane. So I had to put him in there as well. His career record is 29-0, so he's undefeated, and that says something. His weight classes, he's won in lightweight and welter, or that he performs in lightweight and welterweight. Some of the awards he's won, 3-time performance of the night and 2020 UFC honors submission of the year. He's achieved belts in the lightweight division and he's defended his title 3 times. Now moving on to the top 5 greatest male UFC fighters of all time, beginning with number 5. Daniel Cormier. The dude was a beast, and he fought all the heavy hitters at the time. When he fought everybody, and that matters to me. You have to fight all the great fighters of that era to even be considered on any list of mine. And he was obviously one of the greatest wrestlers, as I just mentioned with Khabib. But Cormier actually is an Olympian. He's an Olympic wrestler. So that's his background. And so that's basically usually where that was his bread and butter, was on the ground. But he did get a few knockouts with the fists and with the feet before. So he just was just a dominating guy of his time. His career record, he's 22-3 with one no contest. That was against John Jones. The weight classes he's fought in, light heavyweight and heavyweight. Some of the awards he's won, second UFC double champ, 3-time performance of the night, 2-time fight of the night, and the Strikeforce heavyweight champ. He's achieved belts in both the light heavyweight and the heavyweight, and he's defended his title 4 times. Then at number 4 on my top 5 greatest male UFC fighters of all time, I have Stipe Miocic. This guy is insane. When he hits you, his fists are like bricks. That guy delivers a hit like I have never fucking seen before. He will knock your ass out and it's nuts. I mean, his fists, it's just, like I said, they're fucking bricks. They hit you and it's like boom, 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 and he just is a killer. His career record is 20-4. He's in the heavyweight weight class. Some of the awards he's won, he's a 5-time performance of the night, 3-time fight of the night, and knockout of the night. That is his specialty, are the knockouts with those brick fists of his. He's achieved belts twice. He's the 2-time heavyweight champ, and he's defended the title 4 times. Then at number 3 on my top 5 greatest male UFC fighters of all time, George St. Pierre. This guy is like a lion. When you release him, like as soon as the bell dings, it's like you open the cage door and this guy is just gonna fucking maul you to death. He was insane in his heyday. He would just like pummel you with punch after punch after kick after punch after punch. He'd get you on the ground. This guy dominated the UFC in his era. His career record is 26-2. He fought in the welterweight class and the middleweight class. Some of the awards he won: four-time fight of the night, knockout of the night, submission of the night, performance of the night. He is also a UFC Hall of Famer. He achieved belts as the two-time welterweight champion and the middleweight champion, and defended his title 9 times. The dude was a beast. Now we get down to what was very, very difficult to me, the top two of the top 5 greatest male UFC fighters of all time, because it's so tough. Because it's between Anderson Silva and John Jones. But I went with John Jones as number one. So let's go with number two. Let's talk about Anderson Silva. It was hard because when Anderson Silva fought, that dude was so much fun to watch. He owned the UFC. He was the king of the UFC. Even his injuries are one of the most notorious injuries of all time, when he fucking cranks back, kicks a dude, and breaks his fucking leg on the guy. And if you can handle that shit, go YouTube Anderson Silva leg injury and you just watch it crack. And it's shaped like a fucking L when he's done. So even his injuries are just as crazy as the fights that he won. But when I get to why I put John Jones at number one, you'll understand why. I just couldn't overlook everything that John Jones has accomplished. But Anderson Silva was one of the most accomplished as well. By far one of the most exciting fighters ever in UFC history. He just was such a knockout king. He was a submission king. I mean, the guy was one of the greatest all-around fighters you will ever fucking see in UFC history. His career record was 34-11 with one no contest. His weight classes that he fought in: middleweight and light heavyweight. A few of the awards he won: 7-time knockout of the night, 5-time fight of the night, 2-time submission of the night, longest title reign in UFC history of 2,457 days. He won belts in the middleweight division, and he defended his title 10 times. So Anderson Silva, while he was exciting and fun to watch, I had to put John Jones at number one. And the reason why I put John Jones at number one is because he basically owns every UFC record you can. He still fights to this day. He dominates every single fight. I mean, even the fights that he was, quote, down in, he was never really down. And he would still get the win. And it's just the way he's dominated some other great fighters in the past and in the present. And his all-around fighting skills. He is, out of all the fighters, past and present, he has probably the greatest all-around fighting style ever. He can fight. He can kick your ass standing up. He will kill you with his elbows. He will kickbox your face to fucking death. He can ground and pound you like no other. He will submit you. He just has one of the most all-around greatest fighting styles you will ever see. And he should technically be undefeated. And the controversies, I don't think, in my personal opinion, don't really put a stain on his career. So I just feel like John Jones is the greatest of all time. His dominance, he's never had a down moment, really. His career record is 27-1 and one no contest. The one loss, most people don't think it was a loss. And the no contest, it was, you know, he failed a drug test, so that's going to happen. He's fought in light heavyweight class, heavyweight class. Some of the awards he's won: 4-time fight of the night, 2-time submission of the night, knockout of the night, 2-time performance of the night, youngest UFC champion at 23 years old. He's already in the UFC Hall of Fame. Longest light heavyweight champion reign of 1,501 days. Longest unbeaten streak in the UFC at 19. We all know it would actually be longer if that loss wasn't on there. And then he's had the most wins in UFC title fights with 15, which right there alone, in my opinion, puts him at number one. He's achieved the light heavyweight belt twice and the heavyweight belt, and he's defended his titles 11 times. So I just kind of feel like his resume says it all. While Anderson Silva, probably the most exciting UFC fighter ever, and really just dominated his era and his time, just John Jones, when you watch him, I kind of feel like the reason why some people might not put John Jones at number one is because he doesn't have as many exciting knockouts as, say, an Anderson Silva or Stipe Miocic or Conor McGregor. But who the fuck cares? The dude's got some of the greatest skills you will ever see. And he's still fighting to this day, and he dominates. Like I said, he has not had a bad fight. Even when it looks like he's down, the guy is not out. So I got John Jones as my GOAT in UFC. And he could extend everything. Because it doesn't look like he's retiring, at least anytime soon. So we'll see what happens with the future of his career. All right, now let's move on to the top five greatest female UFC fighters of all time. Now, the difference between these two lists really is, you know, female UFC fighters have not been able to compete as long as male UFC fighters because female UFC fighters just started fighting, I think, what, like 10 years ago? As I said, it's the 30th anniversary of the UFC, so they're celebrating a few things, and it was actually kind of hilarious to watch last week's fight because, you know, when they do just the little things in between fights, when they talk about stories or whatever, one of the things they showed was they got Dana White walking out of like a restaurant or something, and they're like, "So, hey, Dana, are we ever going to get females fighting in the UFC?" And he was like, "Never. We are never going to have women fighters in the UFC." And here we are. And in my personal opinion, I think the women fights are actually more exciting. They're more fun. And there's actually one female fighter in my top five who I actually think could fight men and would actually win on a few occasions. It would depend on who she faces up against, but when we get to her, we'll get to her. But so the difference between this list and the male list is that the females, there's a lot of recent females on here, females who are actually still fighting today. And that's really just because they don't have the same history as male fighters do. And luckily they are fighting and, they are getting, just as much attention as male fighters, which is just great in my opinion. That's one of the reasons why I like the UFC a lot is because, we get to see just as many female fighters as we do male fighters. Now, of course there are more male fighters, but that's really just the circumstance because, you know, not as many women want to fight like there are men. And you know, it's going to take more time. More and more women fighting is going to bring up more and more women fighting. So this list has a lot of more recent women on here, especially the first couple of honorable mentions here. So let's get it kicked off with the honorable mentions on my top five greatest female UFC fighters of all time. I have Rose Namajunas. She is one of my personal favorites. I love watching this chick fight. She is insane. Now, she's great when it comes to submissions, but she's had a few insane knockouts, especially with her feet, where she has kicked the fuck out of a couple of bitches. So right now, her career record is 11-5, and she still has, I feel like she still has quite the career ahead of her. So she could potentially move her way up into the top five at some point in her career, because she's still fighting, and she's still fighting strong. The weight class she's currently in is a strawweight. A couple of the awards she's won: two-time Fighter of the Year, 2017 Upset of the Year, three-time Submission of the Year, 2017 Knockout of the Year. She's won Performance of the Night three times, and she's also won Fight of the Night three times as well. And she's achieved belts in the strawweight division and defended the title twice. But what I really like about her is that she's one of those fighters who fights all the greats. And she will go up against all the greats in her weight class, and she's not scared to do it, and she's even beaten a few of them. So she's even delivered the first loss to one of the greatest female fighters of all time, Johanna Jędrzejczyk. I'm probably pronouncing that last name incorrect, but sorry, that's just one of those fucked up Polish names that is very difficult for me to pronounce. But she's a badass, and Rose Namajunas delivered a huge knockout to that bitch. So had to put her in my honorable mentions, but Rose could absolutely, in the next couple of years, depending on how the rest of her career goes, she could potentially move her way up into my top five. Then another honorable mention on my top five greatest female UFC fighters of all time, Holly Holm, another personal favorite of mine. She is not only one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time, but one of the greatest female boxers of all time. And that's what I love about her. Watching her box, oh, her boxing skills are just fucking to die for. I love somebody who's got great technical boxing skills is just, it's just beauty to me. I love watching great boxing, and Holly Holm is an excellent boxer. She's also an excellent kickboxer, but just her hands, oh, just her technique is just beautiful. And she hit the scene and delivered some of the greatest knockouts to some heavy hitters in Ronda Rousey and Chris Cyborg, by the way. So she's had some big wins, also some big losses too, which is what kind of keeps her out of the top five for me. But I had to put her in the honorable mentions, not just because she's a personal favorite of mine, but she, when she hit the UFC, this bitch hit the UFC and just pummeled motherfuckers like no other. Her career record is 14-6. She still currently fights as well. So who knows, she could potentially move up a little bit further in the ranks as well. The weight classes she's fought in, the bantamweight and the featherweight, some of the awards she's won. She's won two-time Fight of the Night, two-time Performance of the Night, 2015 Upset of the Year against Ronda Rousey, 2015 Knockout of the Year against Ronda Rousey, because that is a hell of a knockout. If you ain't ever seen that knockout, watch Ronda Rousey get knocked the fuck out by Holly Holm and knocked the fuck out by Amanda Nunes. Two of the greatest fucking knockouts ever. Those two against Ronda Rousey. And then 2015 Newcomer of the Year. She's won the belts in the bantamweight and defended that title once. Then my last honorable mention on my top five greatest female UFC fighters of all time, I have Miesha Tate. She is just an excellent wrestler. You know how I was just talking about Khabib and how he's like an anaconda? She's pretty similar. She's like the female version. As a matter of fact, the thing about Miesha Tate is the bitch could take a punch. It looks like she's going to take the world's biggest hit, because this has happened to her a couple times, where she gets hit like a motherfucker. And it looks like the other fighter is about ready to take her ass out. Nah, Miesha Tate gets them. She gets them in some crazy fucking submission position and lights out. Lights fucking out. And she's another one. She still fights. She did take a few years off, but she still fights. And she will fight the best fighters. She will never shy away. Even to this day, she will fight the best fighters. her career record right now is 19-9. The weight classes she's fought in, bantamweight and flyweight. A couple of the awards she's won, two-time Fight of the Night, two-time Performance of the Night. She's achieved belts in the bantamweight and defended that title once. All right, so now moving on to my top five greatest female UFC fighters of all time. beginning with number 5, Valentina Shevchenko. Now, she did just lose last weekend, but hey, that's going to happen. But the thing about this bitch, she is nuts. Nuts. That's the only word to describe Valentina Shevchenko and her fighting style is nuts. She is an excellent fighter. When she kicks you, it sounds like a metal baseball bat to the fucking head. And I'm not kidding. I am not kidding. It sounds like a metal baseball bat to the head. And she's quick as a motherfucker. With the feet, with the fucking fists, she will get you to submit like no other. This bitch is nuts. Her career record right now, because she still fights, 23-4. The weight classes she's fought in, the bantamweight and the flyweight. Here's just a little list of the awards she's won. 3-time performance of the night, tied for the most wins in UFC women's flyweight division history with 9, most consecutive wins in UFC women's flyweight division history with 9, most consecutive wins in UFC flyweight division history with 9, most title defenses by a woman in UFC history with 7. Most consecutive title defenses in UFC women's flyweight division history with 7. Most title wins in UFC women's flyweight division history with 8. Most knockout wins in women's flyweight division history with 4. Second most finishes in UFC women's flyweight division history with 5. Longest average fight time in UFC women's flyweight division history, averaging 17.1 minutes. Most takedowns landed in UFC women's flyweight division history with 35. And holds the most victories over 4 former UFC champions. That list contains Holly Holm, Juliana Pena, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Jessica Andrade, and she has owned each and every one of them. The bitch is nuts. The belts she's achieved were in flyweight, and she's defended her title defenses 7 times. She's still fighting, so she can move up. Would not be shocked if she did, but she's a beast. Then at number 4 on my top 5 greatest female UFC fighters of all time, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. As I said, it's very possible I am pronouncing that last name incorrectly because she is Polish, and so her last name is difficult for Americans to pronounce, but she is also a beast. She has the craziest, fastest fists you will ever watch. She is insane in the membrane when you watch her. And some of her fights, she's had some of the greatest fights ever. She fought against Zhang Weili. Or Weili Zhang, I always forget which one comes first with her. But when that fight was over, their faces were so bruised, battered, and bloodied. Jędrzejczyk's fucking forehead was like so swollen, it was like inches, sticking inches out, like 5 inches out beyond her fucking actual head. It was insane to see. But she has some of the most bloody, bruised, battered, craziest fights in UFC history. Her career record is 16-5. She actually just recently retired, I think last year. The weight classes she's dominated, strawweight and flyweight. Some of the awards she's won, right now she's actually tied with Amanda Nunes for the most title fights in UFC women's divisions at 10. She is a one-time performance of the night, 3-time fight of the night. She's tied with Carla Esparza for most wins in UFC women's strawweight history at 10. Most title bouts in UFC women's strawweight history at 9. Most wins in title bouts in UFC women's strawweight history at 6. Most consecutive wins in UFC women's strawweight history at 8. And she's tied with Angela Hill and Tisha Torres for most unanimous decisions in UFC women's strawweight history at 6. The belts she's achieved, obviously, at strawweight, and she's defended her title 5 times. Now at number 3 on my top 5 greatest female UFC fighters of all time, Chris Cyborg. Yeah, the name says it all. First and foremost, Chris Cyborg is basically who introduced me to the glorious world of MMA fighting. Now, Chris Cyborg, obviously, she worked her way up to UFC. And she pretty much has fought in basically every single level of MMA you can. And I believe it was Bellator I saw her fight in. I could be wrong, but it was not a UFC fight that I saw her first fight in. But I remember it like it was yesterday, because I remember watching her pummel the fuck out of her opponent. And I mean the fuck. You watched her, I could see bruises forming on her opponent's face with each and every punch in real time. It was so nuts to see. Chris Cyborg is who I was referencing, by the way, who I believe could fight a man and win, depending on the man. Obviously, she's not going to beat up some men, but I'm not going to lie, this bitch could fight some men and beat the fuck out of them. She has, you know how I was talking about Stipe Miocic and how he's got bricks for his fists? Yeah, so does Chris Cyborg. Watch Chris Cyborg highlights. Her fists are nuts. This bitch, I don't even know how she's lost a fight, because she will pummel a motherfucker to death, and it's nuts to watch. Like I said, she is what introduced me to MMA. And I remember watching this fight like, holy hell, she has no mercy. Her career record is 26-2. The weight class she's fought in, featherweight. Some of the awards she's won, one-time fight of the night, most wins in UFC women's featherweight division 4, tied with Megan Anderson and Felicia Spencer for most knockouts in UFC women's featherweight division at 2. She's obviously achieved belts in the featherweight division and defended that title twice. But Chris Cyborg, I kid you not, even though she's not number one on my list, if she were to fight a man, I would not be surprised to see her win and knock out a man, because her fists are fists of steel. She is insane. And the name Chris Cyborg alone says this bitch gonna fuck you up. That's all I'm saying. All right. Then at number 2 on my top 5 greatest female UFC fighters of all time, gotta give it up to the bitch who started it all. And that is Ronda Rousey. I wanted to put her at number 1 just because you gotta give Ronda Rousey her respect, because she is why this female fighters are what they are today in the UFC. Ronda Rousey was probably the biggest draw in UFC for like a couple of years, like 3 years straight. You wanted to watch a Ronda Rousey fight over men's fights. Like, that says a lot. Her sheer dominance at the time and just what she did for the UFC, she has to be included in your top 5. And she, in my opinion, has to be top 3 at this point. There is only one woman I put up above her. And when I get to her, you'll know why. Because she's knocked her ass out, is one of the reasons. But Ronda Rousey, she laid the foundation and was so dominating. This bitch owned the armbar like no tomorrow. Like it was crazy. I believe her first like 9 fights were armbar submissions in the first fucking round. Like it's crazy to watch. So she just had some of the greatest fights you will ever see, but she absolutely has to always be mentioned as one of the greats because of what she did for female fighters and the ground she laid, and she did dominate. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She did dominate. And also, you can't be mad at her for going to wrestling. I bet you she makes way more money as a wrestler than she ever did as a UFC fighter. I could be wrong there, but I'm betting you she makes a shit ton of money as a wrestler as opposed to a UFC fighter. But anyways, her career record, 12-2. Weight class, featherweight, and bantamweight. Some of the awards she won, 2-time fight of the night, 1-time submission of the night, 4-time performance of the night. She is the first female UFC champion ever. Basically, Anytime you mention UFC women's fighters, you're almost always going to have to mention Ronda Rousey because she was the first at everything, basically. First Olympic medalist to win a UFC championship. Fastest women's title fight victory in UFC history. 14 seconds versus Kat Zingano. Longest title fight finish streak in UFC history at 6. Most arm bar finishes in history at 9. Most consecutive armbar finishes at 8. Second most title defenses by a woman in UFC history at 6. And won the first ever women's UFC fight in UFC history. She won belts in the bantamweight division and defended her title 6 times. So as I said, you cannot discuss women's UFC without discussing Ronda Rousey. She started that gangsta shit, and this is the motherfucking thanks she get. She was great. No matter what you think of her, she was great. All right, and now number one on my top 5 greatest female UFC fighters of all time, Amanda Nunes. And that's just because not only did she kick the shit out of Ronda Rousey, but she's basically kicked the shit out of every fucking female fighter there is. Her all-around game is spectacular. She's great standing up. She's great with the elbows. She's great with the ground and pound. She's great with the submissions. She's just great. She's the definition of greatness. Her career record is 22-5. She's fought in the bantamweight and the featherweight classes. Some of the awards she's won. Third UFC double champion. First fighter in UFC history to defend two belts simultaneously. Most wins in UFC title fights amongst women at 10. And 5-time performance of the night. She's achieved belts twice in the bantamweight division and in the featherweight division. And she's defended those titles 7 times. And really, Amanda Nunes, she still fights to this day, so she could extend her greatness even further out, which I wouldn't be shocked if she does. But overall, her greatness, you can't argue against. Some of the knockouts she's had are some of the most memorable, especially against Ronda Rousey. That is one of my favorites, is to watch her knock her out. And when Holm knocked out Rousey as well. But those, I believe, are the top 5 greatest male and female UFC fighters of all time. And enjoy this great weekend of basketball. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.